Quasi-Cerebral Talk and Tunes. This is Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Here's what we've got cooking up this hour. You are tuned in to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. We're the campus community radio station broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on unceded stolen lands of the Squamish, Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, and Kwikwetlem First Nations. This episode of Typically Tuesdays was produced on unceded stolen lands of the Ketse, Kwikwetlem, and Tsleil-Waututh First Nations. And at Typically Tuesdays, we recognize the host nations as being the original storytellers and knowledge keepers of these lands, and we thank them for their stewardship of the lands and the waters. I'm Leslie. Today's episode of... Okay, hold on. One moment. Happy Pride Month. Now that that's over, today's episode of Typically Tuesdays is a slightly different one. Normally... I do like to cut up the talking portions with music on the show, and today it is not gonna be that way. Today might be just an incredibly talk heavy episode because I have been thinking about today's topic so much in the past 24 hours. And it really genuinely would not be this way if not for the things that I have learned about this topic that I learned within the past 24 hours. But now I've just been it's like a bad rotisserie chicken. I've been turning that bird over and over and over and over in my brain until it's no longer juicy, no longer succulent. It is just dry and tastes bad. But I can't throw out the bird because, I have no backup plan for today's show. And instead, what we're going to do is something that I personally am not... I don't like to do this type of show where basically I'm going to be taking a big swig of Haterade. And that's just going to be most if not the whole thing on the show today. Maybe I'll give you a little bit of reprieve. There will be music in the background. But other than that, maybe not. Because, one, this is my show. Two, I do what I want. And three, it's really complicated in many ways, actually. Here's the deal. Here's what it is. Several weeks ago, I found out about To Get Her, which by itself sounds like a threat, sounds wild, and unsavory, but it's actually the English name of the latest, hottest, new Korean reality dating series, whose Korean title is called Your Love, a lot nicer to hear. And it is Korea's first ever women loving women reality dating program. And when I heard about that, I was like, oh my god, I've been searching for this for so long. To see other East Asian sapphics find love in this weird kind of entertainment format that normally I don't care about at all, but has enticed me. That's so exciting. And what made it, you know, even more exciting was the fact that this program has actually gained what I understand to be quite a bit of mainstream popularity. At first, I was kind of actually on the fence about watching the show. I had learned about this, like, kind of scandal that went on, it made me feel kind of like icky thinking about watching the program. And then also the episodes were just so long. But put a pin in both of those things, because I'm going to return back to them. But when I found out that the cast was being given, like, full, like, magazine spreads in mainstream publications, like Cosmopolitan Korea, I was like, oh, okay, I've kind of seen this before, you know, the cast of The Boyfriend on Netflix Japan, which I previously talked about, they had also been gaining a lot of popularity. They also received, like, a lot of really great, like, attention in mainstream cosmetics and beauty publications, as well as fashion publications, and it just seemed like what I saw with the aftermath for The Boyfriend, which was this, like, really excited embracing of these queer men who were on people's televisions, maybe that kind of a similar thing was happening in Korea for these queer women. You know, as an East Asian lesbian in the diaspora, I'm always really excited to see people on the continent, like queer people on the continent, be celebrated and embraced. I know it is not exactly, it does not have the greater political impact that, like, actually, like, having material change would make, but it is a little bit heartening to me to see that maybe attitudes around queer people are changing back on the continent. You know, that there could be this newer generation of people who aren't going to have to experience the same types of, like, ostracization and fear that people who are around my age or older have had to experience from their families and friends and loved ones. So that attention and love that the cast of To Get Her were getting, I hate the title, were getting, it sounds like a threat, were getting, made me kind of, like, lock in, and I was like, yeah, you know what, I am going to watch this show, and I want to talk about it on Typically Tuesdays, because that's really exciting to be able to talk about maybe, like, attitudes changing on the continent about queer people. And then I ended up watching the series throughout this week, or last week, I guess, and then I've learned about some things that were even more wild in some cases than the scandal that I had previously found out about, and I was like, what am I going to do about this show? I don't have a backup plan. And I could make a backup plan, like I could just do Music Monday, but those things that were, like, so unsavory that made me legitimately consult not one but two cisgender heterosexuals about what I should do about this plan for today's episode of Typically Tuesdays. They were so unsavory that I just had to reframe and strategize. So today's episode of the show, thanks to the advice of my dear cisgender heterosexual friends, shout out to Sam, shout out to Brianne. Today's episode of Typically Tuesdays is a cautionary tale, which is why it is nuanced. It is complex in the way that Typically Tuesdays often is, and it is, it's gonna be one that hopefully I can make feel light, because I'll just be upset throughout the whole thing. And, I don't know, sometimes I think angry people are kind of humorous. Maybe, again, I'll give you a little bit of reprieve and there'll be music in the background and whatnot. Anyways, today's episode is about my review of To Get Her, the Korean reality dating series starring women who love women. It is the country's first ever sapphic reality dating series. It became very, very popular, even amongst mainstream audiences. And in my opinion, the production history and the aftermath of this program is a cautionary tale. If you are a person who works in the entertainment industry and you are going to produce reality television programs or web series, whatever it may be, take this episode into consideration. This episode of Typically Tuesdays is also actually going to have some content warnings. I am going to be talking about, and this is a long list, so write it down, age gap relationships, as in relationships with big age gaps, anti-sex work rhetoric, bullying, mental health issues, gaslighting and manipulation, love bombing, internalized lesbophobia, and intimate partner violence. If any of that is upsetting to you, please tune into next week's episode of Typically Tuesdays or catch one of our previous episodes up on the archive right now at cjsf.ca, and I'll catch you some other time. But if you're still around, yeah, let's talk about To Get Her. The first thing that was upsetting to me when I started watching this show, okay, let's talk about the content of the show first, because, you know, that's kind of important. Number one, the subtitles that are available for people who are pirating the series, ahoy, they're bad. They are AI subtitles, and it can be kind of difficult to understand some of the stuff that the cast members are talking about, because they're using, like, you know, slang and metaphors and, you know, sentence structures that the English AI machine can't keep up with. And so some of the times when I was watching the show, it was genuinely kind of hard to follow. And it made me really wish that people valued fan subs more. You remember fan subs? Oh my god, I could talk about fan subbing all day. But the subtitles are not all that good, in my opinion. Before I get into the nitty-gritty of it all, though, I'm gonna share a little PSA with you to lighten the mood before we get into the darkness. Here's a bird note.
This is bird note. What's in a name? That which we call a rose by any other name would smell as sweet. That's from William Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, referring to Romeo's family name not mattering to Juliet, only her love and desire for him. And sure, names are conventions, right? But some names contain something special. A bird. For example, the name Paloma comes from the colloquial name in Spanish for the common pigeon, but as a human name, it often refers to doves. Or take Garzón. My last name. It's derived from garza, or heron, in Spanish. Another example is the last name Sokolov, like the one from the Russian-Canadian author Sasha Sokolov, It's derived from sokol, or falcon, in Russian. In the US, Tori could be short for Victoria, but in Japanese, it means bird. And then there's bird-inspired nicknames. Saxophonist Charlie Parker, the American jazz legend, was also known as Yardbird or Bird. Some of his song titles reference the nickname, like the Yardbird Suite, Bird Gets the Worm, Bird of Paradise, and Ornithology. Names are important, and some of them carry a special legacy, that of a bird. The show is also available in Español. Visit our website, birdnote.org, to learn more. I'm Camilo Herrin. I'm Camilo Garzón.
Welcome back to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. I'm Leslie. This episode is a lot. I'm talking about the Korean sapphic dating reality series called To Get Her. I know it sounds like a threat. It's not. It's just unconventionally named. This episode is a little bit unlike what I usually do here, which is going to be mostly ranting, because I'm not saying that I'm trying it something new, but I just had to, my brain. Oh, and just in case I didn't really make it clear already, I don't think that you should watch this program. Like, on Typically Tuesdays, in the years that we've done this show, like, I have kind of developed into the mindset of, like, I'm gonna share thoughts with you, I'm gonna make my case, and then it's really up to you. I'm not gonna, like, punish you, I'm not gonna, like, you know, reprimand you or anything like that, but I'm gonna make my case for something, and you, with your brain, you can figure it out, whether or not I make a convincing argument. I truly do not think that you should watch this show. So it is not happy pride, maybe. This is not gay pride month. This is gay shame month, because it is a shame that this production is in the ether at all. But, yeah. So one, subtitles not very good. Two, this show is a slog. It is quite boring, if I'm gonna be very, very honest. I wish it wasn't. Obviously, I want to be entertained when I watch a program such as this. But I, like, there are reasons as to why it's a slog. When you watch, like, a reality show, especially if it's like a romance-centered reality show, there's a lot of factors to consider in order to make it entertaining, right? You have a bunch of people going onto this program. Usually they are not people who are very used to making reality television, and so they're gonna act a particular way, especially if they're being asked to interact with strangers and to talk about subjects that are very, very vulnerable and make them have to experience an intensity of emotions. A lot of the times, usually people are not being fed very well when they are filming the series. They are not resting very well when they're filming the series, because they have to do, like, a bunch of activities, and they have to, like, film confessionals and whatnot. Most of their day is dedicated to actually working. And then, of course, the producers are gonna try to load you up with booze, so you might be more accidentally a little bit more vulnerable to doing or saying things that are kind of impulsive. And of course, producers of the program, they're looking for a very specific type of person to come on to the show, right? They gotta have, like, a certain mindset that fits their goals for the program. After everything has been filmed, producers, editors, writers, directors can take anything that has been recorded and slice it up and put it together to make a coherent narrative and story. That is how reality television is made. I'm talking about this for ages since I've been talking about reality television on Typically Tuesdays, which hasn't been very long. I've only been making the show for a handful of years. And even with all that, even with all of those things, you know, the drunken shenanigans, the heightened emotions, the people that come onto the program who have interesting standards for their life, even then, this show was boring as heck. I'm pretty sure. It was boring, one, because of the scandal that happened. Shortly after week one of the episodes were released, they released them at 2 episodes at a time on the Korean streaming platform called Wave, I believe. Shortly after those episodes were released, somebody had disclosed, essentially, that a cast member named Devon used to be a sex worker. She was a cam girl for a number of years. She was also a high-end escort. And this really upset audiences. There is really intense anti-sex work stigma in Korea, and at the same time, lesbian audiences were really upset because the person who had done this irreparable harm to disclose these details about Devon's life, this person made claims essentially that Devon is not even interested in women, period, because look at the clientele that she served. She was like dating straight men, and as well she was making content for men. Instead of maybe, here is where the irresponsibility of the producers begin to show itself. Instead of questioning why somebody would share such personal things about Devon's life without her consent to such a wide audience in order to defame her and to put her into a place of where she's vulnerable to intense harassment, the production company ended up seemingly resolving this issue by cutting out as many scenes of Devon from the show as possible. Devon had to come out with her own statement stating, yes, indeed, she did work in the sex industry. She was a cam girl. She was an escort. But in that time, she did not do any sex work that was considered illegal in Korea. And additionally, the reason why this person would make claims that she is actually not attracted to women is because she spent many years dating men because of her shame around her sexual orientation. Now, before she applied on the series, as she claims, she was in a relationship with an abusive man who had threatened to out her and at many times threatened her physical safety as well. In order to come out on her own terms, she applied to be on the show, then she cut her relations with this man, and this person has now decided to defame her by sharing this intensely personal information without her consent to the world. She is taking legal action against this person, but unfortunately, hereafter, we don't know much about her situation. She has not been very highlighted on the program. A lot of her scenes were cut. And she also has not gotten to experience the positive attention around being on the show. So she's not in any of these photo shoots. She's not in any of these interviews for mainstream publications at all. So, one, incredibly upsetting and sad to hear about on Typically Tuesdays. As you know, we are pro-sex work. We recognize that sex work exists on a spectrum and that sex work is a form of work. It is the oldest profession in the world. And unfortunately, despite the fact that many people use sex worker services, the actual workers themselves, due to the high stigma around sex work, sex workers are vulnerable to threats to their safety from clients, and even in the tamest of cases, sex workers are not treated like workers. They do not often get steady gigs. They are not people who often get benefits with their work and labor. At Typically Tuesdays, you know, we try to recognize these things to basically say, like, hey, treat sex workers with respect and care because they offer a service that many people want, basically. And it's a hard job. But what's even harder is knowing the amount of hate and harassment that this cast member is getting because of information about her past that was shared without her consent and that is also highly stigmatized. What has happened after that, seemingly, is that members of the cast are also taking their stances on it and openly denouncing her and their relationships with her, and even in some cases, unfortunately, contributing to a lot of the stigma around her past, making claims that she was trying to also lure them into this shady industry. Throughout all of it, I'm wondering, where is the support that has been given to Diwan for her to maybe take legal action against her abuser, to take legal action around people who are sending libel and slander about her? Where is the support for her to get counseling services and to figure out her own mental health at this time? How is production making sure that she is able to stay safe and to some extent healthy during a time that is very, very challenging and difficult? They refuse to stand with her. They are showing that they truly have no backbone at all for this issue that is actually quite nuanced. Diwan, I believe, actually didn't do anything illegal. She was working in a form of sex work that is stigmatized but is not criminalized. And as I understand it, based on her statements, she turned to sex work because of financial instability. All of those things that I mentioned before, you know, potential legal action, and like mental health services and all that, that requires money. And the fact that like this production is now like, we're gonna cut out any potential employment opportunities for you from now on because you're no longer going to be exposed on the show, is really heartbreaking. It is irresponsible and neglectful, and yeah, I really do wish that the producers had some backbone to reach out and to offer support in the ways that they could to a person who they hired to be on their production. And All of this, unfortunately, also really impacts the content of To Get Her, because as the production does not want to spotlight this person who now has so much stigma against her, they had to cut out so many of her scenes. They had to cut out an entire eighth, basically, of the show that was filmed. So the series is boring. I'm sorry, but like from a content perspective, that really is what it is. And so we're watching, when you watch this program, it's like God is testing you. It's like karmic punishment, because it is the same main like three or four people who are just like going through the motions of being really honestly like not that mature in their ways of like handling going through a relationship. Now these people, let's talk about the rest of the cast here, okay? So that was Zivon, right? The rest of the cast, let's talk about them from oldest to youngest. Because, oh my lordy lord. There's quite a lot to talk about here. Here we go. Oldest to youngest, Mirang, born 1991, real estate agent and facilities manager. Soyeon, 1993, an entrepreneur. Also in 1993, we've got Hyung, who is a tattooist. Then we've got Gina, born in 94 or 95, I forgot. Pin on that. She is an essayist and the founder of an AI startup. Okay, anyways, Minu, born 1995. Then we take a little bit of a step down and we meet Tagyo, born in 2000. She works as a radiologist. Finally, we take a nosedive into hell. We pencil dive into a bubbling pit of lava in a volcano. We walk right off the cliff. We've got Hangil, indie singer-songwriter, born in 2006. Take a deep breath. And then scream. Why? 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 And that's it. That's the cast. And then there's the one. That's it. There's nobody else on the show who is around Hunkil's age. Nobody at all. They casted a 19-year-old on this program where everybody else is basically in their 30s. Why? Why? Why was this a good idea? It's weird, okay? Obviously, it's weird for... It's weird because this is a dating show, okay? And then the only viable options that Hangil has are people who are way older than her, right? There's nobody else who is of her age bracket at all. So when you watch the series, it is deeply uncomfortable watching these women who are in their 30s do one of two things. One, which is the weirder thing, in my opinion, which is they'll go on dates with her. Ugh, okay. Ugh, whatever. And then two, which is not as weird, but kind of hilarious because it's so awkward. People on this cast will be like, oh, Hangil, don't feel so bad that you're so young. You're actually very mature. I don't think that you are too immature at all. And now we gotta watch this 19-year-old. We gotta watch this 19-year-old try to keep up in conversations about love and romance and relationships with these 30-year-olds. I don't know about you, listener. I don't know about you, but I know myself, being a person who has graduated from the age of being 19 many, many years ago, I am a decrepit ancient fossil. I know that when I was 19, and when I wanted people to treat me seriously, I would act like what I think an adult would act like. And then the people who are older than me would be like, ah, interesting. Well, it's good to have that perspective, I guess. Tee hee hee. Oh, she's so cute and endearing. Oh, it's so nice to be that young. She knows nothing of the world. Oh, I'm so endeared. Bro. Ungendered, obviously. What is she doing on this show? Actually, the better question, obviously, to ask, actually, is not so much what she's doing on the show, but where is the responsibility of the producers? In my opinion, it all comes back to the responsibility of the producers. Because when I'm watching this program, a few things are really clear. When you watch the first episode, it's really obvious that Hunkilla is the youngest person in the cast. She looks really young. She, in my opinion, has a baby face. I think anybody would have that opinion, honestly. But she looks really young. And she is obviously feeling a little bit out of place. She's quite reserved and awkward. And a lot of her behavior and thoughts are that of a young person who is in that trajectory in their life where they're still trying to find their footing in the world, but somehow everything in the world revolves around them. And it is not revealed, like, the ages of the cast, it's not revealed until partway through the series, and then it's only even later in the series that we learn that Hangil is the youngest of the cast. Before that, the cast members who share their ages, you know, we're surprised that maybe that there's nobody who is, you know, in their early 20s who's on the cast. But we still don't know Hangil's age. Maybe she just looks really young for her age, right? And she just acts a certain way. It's only halfway through the series where we learn that she's basically a college freshman. Why is this a thing? What should have happened, obviously, from the producers is that they should have casted more people who are of Hangil's age. Because, and here's the kicker, and here's why I think they purposely casted her for a beat of drama is because throughout the series, Hangil expresses her discomfort of knowing that everybody is older than her. There's literally a scene, again, so sad and actually really so sad and kind of funny because it's so sad, but also funny because it's so uncomfortable. There's literally a part in this series where Hangil has a little bit of a meltdown and she's talking to Sayeon and she's like, you know, I don't even know why I'm here. I just never would have imagined that, like, the age gap between me and everybody else would be so big. And she's like having such a hard time. And Sayeon's just sitting there like, oh, well, you know, I don't think that you're a child. Lord, what have I done? What have I done? Is in the boyfriend, right? Like, there were also young cast members. I think the youngest guy on the boyfriend, that Netflix Japan series that I really liked, I think the youngest guy there was 21, but that was remedied because there were other guys his age who were on the show who were like 22, 23, so he had understandable, viable options. And and he pursued them fully. He was like pursuing people who were around his age. Hangil, like, she's flattered by the attention of these older women, but it's obvious that when you feel so incredibly out of place with these other people because they're so different in age than you, that you would feel uncomfortable being there. And the thing that is upsetting to me is whenever this is mentioned in the program, the show producers like to frame it as Hangil is so mature. Hangil is so brave because she is so young and she has this young wisdom to her, and yet she is able to feel comfortable to live openly and out as a lesbian. And the other members of the cast, they really applaud her for this as well. Like, genuinely, I think they're very touched by the fact that Hangil is so young and feels like she can be in a place where she is out and wants to be a bit of a role model to other young lesbians who are struggling. I love that. That genuinely, obviously, is very beautiful. That point, though, would have been driven home so much better if there were also other young lesbians on the show, or other young sapphics on the show. And there is none. There is only Hangil. It makes me wonder, like, just like the level of like neglect and just like no thoughts, smooth brain that these producers have when it comes to like casting and producing this show. It makes me wonder, like, is this karmic punishment? Like, is this like genuinely, is this like, did I do something in a past life to deserve a show that I've been waiting my entire life for that is just so poorly done? Or is it just straight misogyny? Like, how is this possible? Like, is it truly like, Leslie, like, you really wanted this, but you're not gonna get it? You're always gonna get a mid thing because you were a mid person in your past life? Or is it truly producers being like, well, we've got queer people, just send in whatever, just send in whoever, and we're just gonna make the hurdle of everything on this show to not be as good, because women, lesbians, queer women, bisexual, pansexual women, even aro women who want to see queer women falling in love, they don't deserve, like, no, let's, like, you know, they think that they have liberated themselves from the patriarchy by living true to their authentic selves, but let's throw a little wrench in their plans. Let's just go ahead and do that. It's like, why? What? No, please. It is so hard being a woman. Like, genuinely, listener, genuinely, it is so hard being a woman. Like, straight up. But, like, I can't even get, like, a good sapphic television show starring people who kind of look like me. Oh my god. Why? Why? Was this Eve's punishment? Is that what it is? Ugh. Here's a bird note. Splice it up a little bit. Enjoy.
This is Bird Note. Crows play many roles in human cultures, from ominous tricksters to sacred purveyors of wisdom. But for much of American history, the social stigma around crows lent itself to a more pejorative meaning, says attorney and playwright Alice T. Crow.
The crow is a very beautiful creature, very knowledgeable, very intelligent, but in the context of the system of racism, the crow is black, is ugly, is something to be feared. And so the word crow was used to describe color. We were called crows, and the image of the crow lynched upside down was used to intimidate us.
When Alice began looking into her family's history with the Crow surname, she discovered a deep historical connection between the racist symbology of Jim Crow and the negative image of these birds in many Western cultures. A particular irony, given Black people's history with crows pre-enslavement.
Crow in Africa is a bird that was sacred. We learn from the crow. The crow is part of our culture. Even the remnants of culture that people think we didn't hold on to from the African experience, crow gave us that. We held on to that.
For example, in some West African societies, crows symbolize wisdom and leadership, and their movements inspired dances. While they were later appropriated and mocked by the Jim Crow caricature, Alice doesn't let this taint her outlook on the bird.
Crows look at each other, and they look at themselves, and they see beauty. They don't see ugly. They don't see feeble-minded and something to be mocked. They don't always get along. But for the most part, they look out for each other. They mourn the death of each other. They defend each other. So when they look at each other, they see themselves and they love themselves. And I think that's something that we can learn from their behavior.
To learn more about Alice and her documentary project, Our Name is Crow, go to our website, birdnote.org. I'm Ade Ben Salahuddin.
Welcome back to Typically Tuesdays. Hope you enjoyed that bird note. I certainly really did. I love hearing stories like that, especially, obviously, on Bird Note, because I love that series. I'm Leslie, and today I'm talking about a series I don't love called To Get Her, which is Korea's first ever sapphic dating reality show. I know, To Get Her is a wild title, and if it were not a pun, it would sound like a threat. But it is actually supposed to be a pun, though I think that it is actually a threat to my personal mental well-being and soundness, because watching the show is, oh my god, it's so much. But mostly the irresponsibility of the producers is even worse, drives me up a wall, which is why this episode of Typically Tuesdays has been rant heavy with music in the background instead of actually happening while we're in the middle of talking. Watching this show, on the surface, it does seem like it's just like a regular kind of like reality dating series where emotions are really, really heightened, and there are just like a lot of different people on the program that, you know, maybe are just not all that good at communicating, really need to have to work on themselves a lot as well. But then you learn about the stuff that's happening after filming, and the fact that the cast members, the girls are fighting. And no, that's like that's really horrible, actually, because there's some really bad stuff happening off after shooting. One of the cast members, to break it down for you, basically, at this point, when I found out about the further behind the scenes garbage that's going on for about this program, I was already 12 episodes deep. I had already spent more than 12 hours watching the show. I had already received text messages from my friend who I had been live texting things about the show to. I'd already received a response from her that was like, "You never seem to have anything positive to say about the show. Like, why are you watching it?" And then I find out about this. So throughout the series, there is a cast member named Gina and a cast member named Hyung who are involved with each other for the first couple of episodes. Then it turns out they just don't really have the same dating style, and Hyung is kind of like, "You know, I appreciate the time that we spent together, but I don't think that this is going to work out." And Gina gets very upset. You know, she's like, on any other dating show, it's like, yeah, you're being put into this like kind of vulnerable situation. Dating is like very personal, you know, and when you experience rejection, it can feel pretty horrible, right? And especially in a situation where, like, you're getting boozed up all the time. They're not letting you sleep because you had to film a bunch. They're probably not even feeding you very well. It's pretty crappy. But Gina, you know, ends up talking about on the show how she's experiencing flashbacks from a traumatic time in her childhood where she was getting ostracized and bullied by people who she thought were her friends. And how Hyung's rejection kind of reminds her of that. She begins kind of like isolating herself and just like generally kind of bopping around in a not very like spirited way anymore. She was like very bubbly in the beginning and now she's like obviously going through it. But you know, this kind of thing, it happens, right? This is like storyline in reality television, unfortunately. But then you begin to realize, because you, as in me, are going through the discussion forums on Reddit, and you find out that Gina has been basically openly slandering and libeling Hyung post-production, being like, she was like getting everybody to try to ostracize me, and she was conspiring against me. And then you realize, okay, yet another issue that production could have easily avoided if they gave these people psych evaluation. Listen, obviously Gina's going through something really horrible, and I want the best for her. I want her to like feel secure in who she is. I want her to be able to like, you know, move through life happily. But now she's like out here slandering people, and it's like, bro, why is this happening? Watching the show, it just kind of feels like Gina's really, really intense. Like, she, you know, is moving really, really fast in her relationship with Hyung. Like, finding out about this stuff afterwards, it's like bullying and manipulation and gaslighting. Obviously, we don't see everything that happens on the that happens in the program and stuff, based on how the story, you know, how the producers want the story to flow. And we don't see behind the scenes, and we don't know what's happening between these two people after shooting, or even when the cameras aren't on. But it is a lot to be claiming that, like, I was being bullied on set by my fellow castmate, and there was apparently no support for that. Producers of To Get Her, may I ask you, what makes you feel like you can make this series without feeling you have some responsibility to your cast to make sure that they are doing okay before, during, and after shooting? What makes you feel as though that you can just allow the stuff to happen after shooting while your show is being broadcast, which puts your cast members in vulnerable positions where they could get dogpiled and harassed online and potentially lose employment opportunities, potentially like lose just like general like favoritism and likability in public life? What makes you feel that way? Because when I hear about a person who feels like she was bullied during this production and then she has to go online to disclose it, I'm thinking two things. I'm thinking, number one, this person, if these claims are true, really, really needs support. Number two, if these claims are not true, still really, really needs support. And these people are just out here doing this dang thing. Originally, as I said, like, I, watching the show, I'm just annoyed by these people. Now, watching this series, having finished it, by the way, I did end up finishing it. I don't know if you would want to, if you watch it, but I did end up finishing To Get Her. Again, a threat. And they got me good, because I thought that this was going to be a good show. I thought this was going to be a good series. I thought that, you know, the stuff that happened in and out of production was going to be chill, right? Like, obviously, you know, like, not to compare it to Drag Race, but obviously to compare it to Drag Race, like, even Drag Race has psych evals now, because people will go onto the show and they'll do something before, during, or after the program, and then there needs to be some kind of, like, damage control that is actually coming from a place of care and coming from a place where the person who is experiencing whatever thing that they're experiencing can be supported throughout this particularly difficult and strange time in their life where they become a public figure. Why is that not happening on this program? Like, the past couple of years, I don't know, like, in the West, like, it's been really, really important for reality television producers to have that kind of, like, network of support for their cast, like, before, during, and after. Like, you do, like, a psych evaluation, you film the show, you offer, like, you know, resources for your cast members and stuff like that. You want to be able to step in when there's anything big that's going down and that type of thing. And you do whatever you can to support the members of your cast. With that being said, watching this show and knowing about how, in my opinion, poorly a lot of things were handled throughout, before, and after, it's like being the victim of cannibalism. Like, I feel like I'm being eaten by my own people, right? Like, like, when they say to get her, that's what they mean. They got me. They got me, they bonked me on the head, that now they're going to cook me and eat me, because it is so hard to get through this entire experience. The final thing that I want to say as we wrap up today's episode of Typically Tuesdays is that on the surface, To Get Her feels like it's, when you watch it, it feels like it's about media representation, right? Finally, like, this group, this community of people that have often been marginalized and underrepresented or presented in a bad light are finally getting some time in the spotlight and being presented in a positive way. But when you find out about all of the stuff that happened before, during, and after production, just how poorly the D1 scandal was handled, just how poorly casting was handled, just the potential idea that there were no psych evals and no mental health resources or anything like that distributed during or after the production, it's not just about media representation anymore. It becomes also about the responsibility of the storyteller and to the extent in which they take it upon themselves to be accountable to the people who they want to apparently spotlight. Remember that this show was filmed over the course of 7 days, and there are 14 about an hour long episodes in this whole series, excluding like bonus content. That is so much filming. The cast of this show, they are workers for the producers. When they are filming, they are workers for the producers when they are promoting the program as well. And unfortunately, because of the way that our society thinks about marginalized peoples, the cast of the show now all bear the burden of being representations of lesbians in Korea. Now that is how they're going to be viewed, that is how they're going to be embraced, and that's going to be how they're scrutinized. It is the responsibility of the producers to take care of their cast. And if they are truly claiming like they want to uplift lesbian voices, they want to uplift lesbian communities in Korea, then they actually have to show up and they actually have to take care of their lesbians. But I don't see that happening in To Get Her. And for me, as an East Asian lesbian, as somebody who's been wanting to see a production like this for so long, it is incredibly disappointing. And that's it. That's today's episode of Typically Tuesdays. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you watched To Get Her, write in I'm at Typically Tuesdays on Instagram. And if you didn't watch To Get Her, consider yourself spared. I've been Leslie here on Typically Tuesdays on 90.1 FM. I'll talk to you very soon.